the Christian tradition of meditation. I'd like to look at the tradition of prayer we've been practicing in meditation. John Mayne had an awakening here in Malaysia as a young man when he met a holy and active Indian monk. The turning point for John Mayne in bringing what he had learned here in Malaysia into touch with what he discovered in his own tradition, that came some years later. Actually, at the busiest time of his monastic life, he had been sent to Washington, D.C., headmaster of the Benedictine School. This was in the late 60s. The country, the church, education was in crisis. The monks were leaving to get married, and everybody else was not getting married anymore. The children were in rebellion and drugs, and there was a financial crisis in the school. And John Mayne, who was a very practical and a good administrator and a good leader, team builder, was sent to bring order into this chaos. And one of the first things he had to do was raise $1 million for the school, get the school faculty and the students working together again. And he was very successful. In the middle of this, a young man came to the monastery. He'd just come back from Asia. He'd been traveling for a year around the ashrams of India and the zendos of Japan and the Buddhist centers of Thailand. He had been exploring meditation. He'd come from a Catholic background, but was now gone a long way from it. But he came back home and he visited the monastery because he said, I wanted to find out if there's anything in Christianity that can relate at the same level to what I learned in Asia, in the East. He went to see the abbot. He hadn't had any connection with the monastery before. He just thought, well, I'll go to a Christian monastery. I'd be visiting monasteries in the East. And the abbot didn't quite know how to handle this. So the abbot took the normal course. If you've got an extra job to do, give it to the busiest person. So he gave it to John Mayne. He said to John, could you have a chat with this young man, and he wants to stay for a few days and he wants to find out about Christian mysticism or something like that. So John Mayne sat and listened to this young man's sincere search for truth, for deeper experience of God, and gave him a book to read by Augustine Baker, a 17th century English Benedictine monk. It's a great classic of the English Benedictine tradition, and like most classics, it's not read very often. But he thought there was a lot of material in it, and it might keep this young man occupied. And he was a little surprised when he came back later in the day and said, this is a fantastic book. He said, I never realized there was all this in Christianity. So John Mayne said, oh, I better look at this myself again. So he looked at the book, and the book was drawing a lot upon the early monastic tradition, actually a pre-Benedictine tradition, that goes back to the monastic wisdom of the desert, the Egyptian desert, which was the first great flowering of the monastic life in Christianity. And for about 150 years, the deserts of northern Egypt were the epicenter of Christian spirituality, and people from all over Christendom would go there to sit at the feet of the great teachers of the desert. And one of these great figures that emerged from the desert movement was a monk called John Cassian. John Cassian probably came from what is now modern-day Romania, and with a companion at the end of the 4th century, he traveled to Jerusalem, entered the monastery of St. Jerome, but didn't find it was deep enough for him. And he went over the border to meet with the desert fathers of northern Egypt. And he spent, we think, about 20 years there. He sat at the feet of the great fathers, the great abbas of the desert. At the beginning of the 5th century, he left Egypt, went to Constantinople, was ordained a priest by St. John Chrysostom. And then the next we hear about him is that he has turned up in Marseille in the south of France. There he established a double monastery, one for men, one for women. Now, the connection with John Mayne in Washington, D.C. in 1969 came through his rediscovery of Cassian. When Cassian settled in south of France, he was approached by a local bishop who was concerned about the wild monks that were running around his diocese. In those days, monks were much wilder than they are now. They hadn't been clericalized and they hadn't been tamed by canon law. They were probably an expression of the prophetic, the bands of prophets that used to wander around in the Old Testament times, a little difficult to control, and some of them maybe very holy and some of them completely crazy. So the bishop said, we need to put a little bit of order into this monastic movement. So could you write something about it? You've been out there in Egypt. Put some theology into it. Put some order. Put some structure to the monastic movement. So Cassian set himself to write and produce two great works of Western spirituality. One is called The Institutes of the Fathers, describing some of the basic principles of monastic living. And the second book, his more famous book, The Conferences of the Fathers. There were 24 conferences. And in these conferences, he compressed and compounded a composite teaching of the desert tradition. And he puts these teachings into the mouths of a number of great legendary figures of the desert. At the center of the structure of this great work, there are two conferences on prayer delivered by Abba Isaac. Conference 9 and Conference 10. Conference 9 begins with John Cassian and his friend Germanus, these two young, eager novice monks, go to Isaac and they say, teach us about prayer. That's why we're here. That's why this monastic movement has started out here in the desert, because people wanted to come to a place free from distraction and busyness and noise, away from the cities. They came into the desert to pray. We know the importance of the desert in biblical tradition as a place for meeting God, for achieving a radical simplicity of mind and desire, a place of focus, a place of concentration, a place where you can be really present to yourself and to God. So they came to Isaac and they said, but we want to know more about prayer. What can you tell us about prayer? And Isaac begins to speak about the different forms of prayer. He uses St. Paul's description of the different forms of prayer, supplication, petition, thanksgiving, and so on. And in each of these descriptions of prayer, he says there is a movement. There's a sense of direction in prayer. In prayer, we're not just like turning a prayer wheel. There is a repetition, of course, in prayer. Now, for example, we may have daily mass, we say the office, we repeat forms, we repeat words in prayer, there's a repetition. But it's not a mechanical repetition. This is very important if you want to understand meditation and the saying of the mantra, repetition of the word. It is repetition, but there's an important difference between different kinds of repetition. There's a mechanical repetition, which deadens the spirit after time, that makes us restless and impatient and hungry for change and angry because we feel trapped in this mechanical repetition. Repetition, you know, can either be faithful or mechanical. Abbot Isaac, if you read the Ninth Conference, speaks about prayer, and he recognizes that these different forms of prayer have a repetitive aspect to them. We come back to the different forms of prayer. We pray in different ways at different times, but we have a limited range of forms of prayer, perhaps. But at the same time, he had a sense that prayer was moving us in a positive direction. So it's like the wheels of a car revolving around and around repetitively, but they're moving you. They're not in the same place. Now, what does Isaac say about where all of this is taking us, the goal of prayer? Well, by the end of the ninth conference, he has a beautiful passage where he describes the prayer of fire. He says, eventually we are led into this prayer of union where we join with the prayer of Christ. We are united with his prayer in the way that fire unites itself with what it is burning. So we are involved in the same fire of love that Christ is experiencing in his worship of the Father. So this beautiful idea of the goal of prayer, union with the prayer of Christ, reflecting one of the most ancient ideas of the Christian tradition, that the goal of life is contemplation.